there, everybody. It is Wednesday, November 9th, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Kent. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line at thisshowissogay@aol.com, strolling on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn about all the fun goings-ons with our dog and pony little gay show. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Am I by myself? I am not. Who's here?
It's Jody.
Hi, Jody. How do you feel?
I feel much better than last week.
But if people hear you coughing, then you have to do your standard line of, every time I look at you when you've been coughing, what have you been saying?
I'm fine.
I'm fine.
Really fine, which is true.
I'm gay, but I'm not sick.
That's right.
Because gay people are not sick, Jody, and the sooner that you accept that, the sooner your marriage will be even happier.
Unless they have the flu, and then they really are sick.
Yes, then gay people. Yeah, it's not to say that gay people can't get sick.
Right.
But as a rule, Jody, gay people are not sick.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to tell our listening audience that.
Oh, good.
So we've been gone for a while. I traveled. There's a
you
whole
did.
Big world out there. Did you know that? Tons of people out there.
Yeah, lots of them.
All
not
these
here.
Different states.
Mm-hmm.
All these different states.
Yeah.
Different states, different countries, like
yep.
Minnesota. All right, we have tons of news to talk about. We will start where you and I always seem to start, the apology of the week. And we need a sound effect for the apology of the week. Apology of the week. I was dying to use that.
Yeah,
so
you were.
Exciting.
Yeah, you were.
All right, so this is the big one. Did you hear about this? The Oscar, the guy with the producer of the Oscars?
No.
It's the big story of the week.
No.
So this is Brett Ratner. He was the producer of this year's Oscars. I say was because he is no longer. He has stepped down. Yesterday, in an attempt to tamp down an explosion of bad press surrounding his remark that rehearsal is for fags, which I can say that, right? Like, because that was his quote.
That's a,
so that's a quote.
You can say that, but whoa.
Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences President Tom Chirac expressed support for Ratner, even as he criticized his comments as inappropriate, dumb, and insensitive. He said that we all make mistakes, and I believe he didn't mean it. But the whole deal is that he has stepped down, Brett Ratner, from being the producer of the Oscars. And he's got a pretty long statement, which I kind of want to read to folks. Dear colleagues, over the last few days, I've gotten a well-deserved earful from many of the people I admire most in this industry, expressing their outrage and disappointment over the hurtful and stupid things I said in a number of recent media appearances. So one would believe he said it more than once. To them and to everyone else I've hurt and offended, I'd like to apologize publicly and unreservedly. And then there's more. He says more. So many artists and craftspeople in our businesses and in our business are members of the LGBT community, and it pains me deeply that I may have hurt them. I should have known this all along, but at least I know it now. Words do matter. I find it difficult to believe that he didn't know that before.
He's producer of the Oscars. How can he not
well,
know that words
he
matter?
He writes movies.
Hello?
He writes movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he stepped down. And he did say this. So I am grateful to GLAAD for the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation for engaging me in a dialogue about what we can do together to increase awareness of the important and troubling issues this episode has raised. And I look forward to working with them. I am incredibly lucky to have a career in this business that I love with all of my heart and to be able to work alongside so many of my heroes. I deeply regret my actions, and I am determined to learn from this experience. Sincerely, Brett Ratner. So he stepped down from the Oscars, which I think was probably appropriate.
I think it's appropriate.
So now here's the fun part. So now all the people in the Hollywood industry, of which Jody and I are chief people in the Hollywood industry, they are all responding. So this is a member of the producers branch of the Academy of Motion Pictures. Quote, you don't hire someone like Brett Ratner and get all crazed when he makes a misstep like that. I don't think he should have been fired. So that's that one.
If he wasn't fired, he stepped down.
Well, yeah. From a member of the producers branch, Brett is another person. Brett is such a talented man in terms of knowing how to entertain the masses. He has directed 4 films that have grossed more than $100 million domestically. I don't know what that has to do with anything. He is a great showman and entertainer. He also lacks political correctness, tact, and self-awareness. The Academy knew that in hiring him, so this shouldn't be a surprise. You cannot hire Ricky Gervais to host the Globes and expect him to be polite. The same is true in hiring Brett. This is not about politeness.
No.
This is about being offensive.
Right.
This is about being offensive. And other people said, don't care about having lied about who he slept with, felt very strongly about the fags comment. It's a very terse statement. So some people supported him stepping down. Other people said, no, you knew who you were going to get with him. And yeah, we should have kept him. So That's Brett Ratner, okay. Former producer of the Oscars. Hey, Jody, you know one way that you can become gay?
How?
You can have a stroke.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. That a stroke can turn you gay. This is what a rugby player has now said. After breaking his neck, attempting a backflip, and then suffering a stroke, Welshman Chris Birch went from a sports-loving heterosexual to an out-and-proud homosexual, or so he says. He made headlines last month in the UK when he told the Mirror about his accident and subsequent reversal of orientation. He said, quote, "It sounds strange, but when I came round, I immediately felt different. I wasn't interested in women anymore. I was definitely gay. I had never been attracted to a man before. I had never even had any gay friends." So a stroke, I mean, it's medically proven. It's medically proven that a stroke can turn you gay.
Wow.
I know. What do you do with that?
I don't know.
I don't think people should be attempting backflips.
No, they really shouldn't. They're very dangerous.
By the way, problematic about this story, because this is the fun part. We can analyze these stories on a number of different levels.
We can.
He went from being a sports-loving heterosexual to an out-and-proud homosexual.
Right. The problem being homosexual folk like sports, too.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Not mutually exclusive. Yeah. Being a sports-loving heterosexual and an out-and-proud homosexual.
Yeah.
But that wasn't even the point of the story.
Right.
So, all right, so the crux of what you and I have to talk about today is the new way of talking about the gay marriage.
The gay marriage.
So this is a group of high-profile Democrats and Republicans who back legalizing gay marriage are calling on advocates to shift the focus on the issue from an argument about equal rights to promoting the value of commitment. So less about legal rights, more about love. Think about that as I read a little bit from this.
Okay.
The commitment campaign is called the Commitment Campaign, which is spearheaded by the centrist Democrat group Third Way and will be publicly launched today, Wednesday, has won support from Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, a Democrat, Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee, an independent, and former Republican New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman. So advocates have long made the case that legalizing marriage for gays and lesbians is a matter of equality, but those who frame the issue that way might be reinforcing a belief among many Americans in the middle on the issue that gays and lesbians want to marry for different reasons than straight couples, and that's according to the Third Way.
Okay.
When asked why couples like you might want to marry, 58% said to, quote, publicly acknowledge their love and commitment to each other. When asked why gays and lesbians may want to marry, the respondents split between love and commitment and rights and benefits. Should we be talking about rights or should we be talking about love? Jody.
I think it has to do with both, really.
But they're saying that if we back away from the legal piece, then we can get gay marriage.
Okay. So it's two different things.
Okay.
What is it about in the big picture? It is about all of those things, and I'm sure a bunch of other things as well. But in terms of framing, if they need to frame it differently so that it's going to win more support, particularly from fence-sitting centrists who are like, well, but I have all these conservative people that are focusing on what LGBT folks do in bed, as opposed to the emotional commitment, the families that these people have, and that if they are going to frame it this way, and that's going to be much more compelling to actually go, oh, now I get it. It really isn't about the sex. It's about the love and families, and in particular, if they start bringing in a lot of the, oh, well, and they have a lot of adopted families. There's a lot of children involved here. These are wonderful people to have in neighborhoods and on school boards and all these kinds of things.
They're all recovering from strokes.
They're all recovering from strokes.
That's how they're gay.
And loving sports anyway.
Yes.
Again, if they need to frame it differently in order for people who are stuck, because that's what it is. They're stuck in this whatever they're stuck in. If this is going to help them get unstuck, then I support that. Because it's not lying. It's not making something up. It's not saying, oh, gay marriage isn't about rights. It's actually about jelly beans. You know, it's because it isn't. At least not
I just got
me.
Really excited. I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't get that.
You didn't get jelly beans?
I did not get the bag of jelly beans when I got married.
Oh.
I just got really excited.
I'm sorry. All right,
so it turns out as I'm thinking about this and listening to you, I'm in one of those moods. I'm in one of those moods where I'm like, really? We have to frame it. So we have to figure out what the best marketing strategy is. And
yeah, I'm not in the
mood.
Too.
I'm not sorry. In the mood. I just want people to give me gay marriage.
Okay. This is why you're not working with those people. You're doing a gay radio show instead.
I am swaying the popular opinion. Listen, I had a stroke, Jody.
I'm really sorry.
I'm gay now.
You are, yeah.
I miss sports, but, right. You know, all right. I don't.
That must have been rough having a stroke, you know, in utero there.
I did. Yeah. Yes. I think more so for my mother.
Yeah.
Who was on the show. Just a month ago.
Did she talk about how traumatic that was?
She talked about how traumatic having me was, but she wasn't really talking about, you know, the stroke.
The stroke.
That was a whole different thing. She was just saying, generally, having me for a son. No, she was great. And my mom continues to get emails. People have been listening to that show a lot. So I should say, on behalf of my mom, she thanks you enormously for your emails. And please send her more. She loves them. The show is so gay at AOL.com. So apparently we have to frame it, and that's how we're going to get gay marriage. And
yeah.
I guess that is why they're not calling me to work on these issues.
Probably.
Because I'm not in the mood to frame.
No.
Hey, you know who's feeling depressed and invisible?
Who?
Do you want to take a guess?
There's so many. I don't know.
Bisexual women.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Bisexual women.
Yeah, they are.
A new study finds a high occurrence of depression, stress, and anxiety among bisexual women, mm-hmm. and that they often report a feeling of being invisible.
Yep.
Lead researcher Lisa Lindley, she said, quote, there tends to be this expectation or standard that a person picks one sexual identity and sticks with it. Mm. I think there's a misunderstanding about bisexuals.
Mm.
George Mason University survey also showed that bisexual men and women tend to abuse alcohol as teenagers, but the dependence on alcohol drops for men as they age. The prevalence of alcohol abuse for bisexual women stays the same.
Hmm.
And this is more from the researcher, quote, I think their risk has a lot more to do with stigma.
Yeah.
Again, we try to talk about bisexual identity on the show, but we fail usually. We usually fail.
Well, I mean, it's not that we fail in talking about it. It's that we fail in swaying public opinion.
Oh, no. No. I would say that this show, So Gay, fails largely in talking about bisexual identity.
Okay.
That, I mean, we do pull our stories mostly from national LGBT media, and our guests, you know, our guests are often prominent lesbian gay folks in culture who don't talk about bisexual issues. So no,
sure.
I own my own failures.
Okay.
I think that oh well, but we had Robin Oakes on the show. Yeah, that's one guest who this one time a year we talk about bisexual identity. No, okay. I think that we largely fail in that. That's something we need. I actually think that we talk about transgender identity more than we talk about bisexual identity.
You know what? I would actually agree with you. Partly because of the amount of stories that have been coming into the media about that. And I think, how many trans guests have
you
had?
A chunk.
Okay.
I mean, although I think that number's augmented by, we've had 3 contestants from RuPaul's Drag Race alone. but it was a really kind of an interesting moment when we had, I'm reflecting back, it's like a retrospective show this week. Mara Kiesling, who's the executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality, who mm-hmm. we had an unbelievable conversation. I would love to have Mara back on the show. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I will, and folks can go back and listen to this on this show, SoGay.com. Mara said it's going to be a horrible misquote right now, but something along the lines of, please, I would love to come back on the show. And keep in mind, we don't actually have to talk about all things transgender.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about other things as well. And
right. And
I wasn't feeling that in the moment of, oh, no, obviously we have to talk about all things transgender. And,
right.
So that was kind of a nice little learning opportunity for me.
Hmm.
But yes, no, I would say that this we really do need to strive more to talk about bisexual identity on the show, especially with all the different health surveys that very clearly state that the health risks associated with individuals who identify as bisexual are disproportionately higher than even lesbian, gay, transgender community.
Sure.
So, something more to work on.
Definitely.
Something more to work on. Oh, you know what we can also talk about?
What?
So there's a school story. I'll cover the school story, but then we're going to go back and talk about, because you and I didn't get a chance to talk about it. We just heard someone else talk about it. So we'll just quickly cover that in West Virginia, which, by the way, I looked it up, totally a state, one of the 50,
a proposed
anti-bullying policy for West Virginia schools acknowledges for the first time that sexual orientation and gender identity are common reasons for harassment. Had it been in place when Michael White was in middle school, it might have spared him the worst years of his life. This is Michael White is a 21-year-old junior at Fairmont State University, and he said, quote, "When I heard about this, I started crying because it's been a long road. This is very, very necessary, and I really think it will be a massive step towards equality."
Hmm.
And so let me tell you a little bit about it. It tells students and their families that they have the right to protection. It effectively provides political and legal cover to teachers, counselors, and others who might hesitate to intervene for an LGBT student.
Hmm.
It's weird that that greases the wheels, but I guess it does. But you know who doesn't like it?
Who?
That would be the Family Policy Council, who has long opposed protections for people based on sexual orientation or gender identity. They call the policy dangerous and expansive, and they say bullying should be defined by a person's actions, not the status of his victim. But this is my favorite quote. The West Virginia Family Foundation, they say it's a, quote, well thought out, well crafted design, which that's a nice quote, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is, it's a well thought out, well crafted design done for no other reason than to promote the homosexual agenda. But look how they're acknowledging. I think we've come a long way when they say that this policy is well thought out and well crafted. And that president said, quote, "They're trying to force a lifestyle the majority of the people of West Virginia do not want their kids exposed to. It undermines their values and their religious teachings." But on the happy side, it looks like in West Virginia that they will have more protections for LGBT students. Now, here in the Brattleboro, Vermont.
Yes.
What did you do last Friday night?
Last Friday night.
And I can actually tell you if you don't remember.
I was confusing Saturday with Friday.
Okay.
Last Friday night, the first thing I did was I went to the inaugural meeting, small as it was, of the Friday Night Lights for LGBT youth for the area, of which we had one awesome youth.
Awesome.
Show.
Yes.
And hopefully in the future there will be more of
yes.
them.
Yeah. I firmly believe that there were any number of LGBT youth that saw the announcement that thought to themselves, okay, I'm not going to go to the first one, but I'm going to build myself up to that, or they had a conflict. But
I
also would like to say that this is something that cost us maybe $60.
Oh.
And is something that anyone can do. My God, if we do nothing on this show but talk about things that you could do, because we get these emails, people saying, I want to make a difference, I don't know what to do. Put up flyers and have a drop-in night for LGBT youth. And be very specific about how old, because
yes.
that became a thing.
Yeah.
That became a thing.
Yeah, yeah,
be specific about how old, reach out to the school, do whatever you can. You know, it would be great if you have a background in education or social work, but you don't need to. Don't need to. You just want to provide a safe and supportive place. So we did that.
Yep.
So the drama right now in Brattleboro High School, and we might be amplifying it by talking about it on the show, I'm totally fine with that, is they are looking to change the name from their Gay Straight Alliance to the Queer Straight Alliance.
Yes.
And some teachers are not for that.
Right, because they don't like that word.
So the question that all of our listeners want to know, is Jody Clark for that change from Gay Straight Alliance to Queer Straight Alliance?
I am totally in favor.
You didn't even think about it.
I don't need to. I've already thought about it. I was there when she posed it to me, and I'm totally for that because of what queer means now.
Okay.
The way that it's used.
Which, didn't you ask her?
Well, I wanted to know what she thought it
meant. Okay. Okay.
And she her thoughts on it were very similar to mine, and what I've experienced working with LGBT youth and young adults is that queer is now used as sort of an all-encompassing catch-all for anyone who identifies as not as straight,
right?
Not exclusively as straight, and so if you want to be encompassing and not go LGBTQQI doo-dah, doo-dah, you know, with all of the different.
Have you ever said? sang that before?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I thought we just debuted that on this show, and I got so excited.
It's never been recorded, so this is the first recording.
Wow. That's going right into the description of this week's show. We're debuting the recording of Jody Clark's hit new song.
LGBTQQI, doo-dah, doo-dah. Which, unfortunately,
leaves out... I'm so excited to write the rest of that.
It leaves out A, which, because it doesn't fit into that very neatly. But there's always more in the alphabet soup of what are we representing... No. Allies.
Oh!
Allies!
It was a joke.
But at any rate, there always seems to be another one that needs to be added in order to feel like, oh, we're including everyone. And then it's hard to frame, well, who are you not including? What are you about anyway? All these letters, and what do they all mean? So it's not a distraction. So it's easy to identify who are you, what are you guys about? Having a queer straight alliance in this current culture makes sense.
Hmm.
Makes sense.
What do you say to the teachers who say, oh, I'm just really, I would have been involved with that and supporting it as the Gay Straight Alliance, but I'm not comfortable with the word queer, and so I'm going to hesitate to get involved right now.
Well, I would want to engage with them about their specific fears about the word, why are they uncomfortable with it, and to really engage with them about this, I hear what you're saying about what the term means for you, but that's also what it used to mean. And I'm guessing a lot of their fears is about what they felt it used to mean, that it was derogatory, and that they also are ending up feeling like it's a negative word in some way. It's just a negative word. And that's not what it is anymore. It sometimes is still used that way, but it's so in popular culture. It's in the titles of shows. People use it all the time as an identity, as a descriptor. It's that one, I think, of any of the words that have been negatively used has really been reclaimed as, no, this is our word now.
But not to the point where GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, has on their website, join the alliance of QSAs. The official...
Right, no.
The official title.
Sure. Well, maybe they're not there yet. You know, and I can see them not being quite there yet. Kids are usually at the forefront of these things.
Right.
So...
And Brattleboro even more so.
Wherever.
Yeah.
Wherever. So kids are going to be the ones who really push this agenda forward.
And the other thing they're working on is introducing LGBT history into the curriculum, which is something they have done in California.
Yeah.
And so that's a really good thing, too. So hopefully that's something that moves forward. So that's going on. It was a big night this week, last night, for LGBT candidates. Did you hear about this? A lot of candidates won. Houston Mayor Anise Parker, she trounced several opponents and earned 51% of the vote to avoid a runoff. So she won, so that's great. Democrat Adam Eben became Virginia's first openly gay state senator.
Cool.
So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Seelback, he won his bid for a seat on the Cincinnati City Council.
Cool.
Holyoke, Massachusetts.
Hey, that's nearby.
Elected 22-year-old Alex Morse. Over an incumbent, 45 years his senior, elected him to what? I have absolutely no idea.
Elected him to something.
I'm totally going to reach out to Alex Morse. And question number one is, hey, well, first, congratulations.
Yeah.
Second, on what, dude? Luana Mayfield became the first openly gay elected official in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was there this summer. No, I wasn't. I was in Charleston. Those are two different places.
They are.
That is home of the upcoming 2012 Democratic National Convention. Mm. But in San Francisco's mayoral race, incumbent Ed Lee, he currently maintains a substantial lead over a field of 16 opponents, which includes gay candidate Bevin Dufty. So it doesn't look like there's going to be a gay San Francisco mayor. And I know. Well, this is all the victory fund. Also in the Virginia Senate races, gay Republican Patrick Forrest, whose campaign became the target of a whisper campaign about his sexual orientation, he lost to Democratic incumbent State Senator Janet Howell. But again, I think the most significant is Holyoke electing Alex Morse to the position of...
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
I got nothing. I don't know what he was elected to. But Anise Parker, that's a big one. Houston is one of the biggest cities in the country.
Hmm.
So, And we've talked about this. To what degree does a candidate's gay status post-stroke influence your decision to vote for them?
Really, not much, unless I agree with what they stand for beyond them just being gay or queer or whatever. I need to know what they're going to do.
I disagree.
Okay.
If they're gay, I vote for them.
Okay.
Just want to put that out there.
Okay.
It's a good thing. That's actually it for our news wrap-up.
Okay.
Anything else you want to talk about? You know who's coming on the show a little bit later?
No.
Reverend Emily Heath.
Oh, cool.
Her second appearance on the show.
Yay.
Are you okay with your reverend being gay?
Yes.
Has that happened to you before?
Yes, it has. Okay. In fact, yeah.
Have you seen a difference between the gay reverends and the not gay reverends? There you go. Folks, and we are back in a whole different studio than Jody and I were in just a little bit ago, because we're joined by a new guest, the Reverend Emily Heath. Welcome back to this show, Is So Gay.
Thanks, Ken.
And you're here. You're not even on the phone.
I'm not. No
Look
luggage.
Look at that. Trip. Oh, that's right. You were in the airport.
Yeah.
We are bringing the show to you. I don't even have a whole bio for you. You're the Reverend Emily Heath. What else do they even need to know?
That's all you need to know.
That's all you need to know. Tell everyone what congregation, though, because they might want to know that.
Well, I'm with two United Church of Christ congregations here in Vermont, but I'm a pastor of the United Church of Christ.
And if someone says, oh, the United Church of Christ, that's those people.
We are what used to be called the Congregational Church here in New England, and we are the church that sort of descended from the Pilgrims and the Puritans, but we've gone in sort of a new direction.
Okay.
Since the 1600s, and have evolved with the times, and now we're one of the most progressive mainline Protestant denominations in the country.
Is it impolite to ask you about your calling? Because we didn't talk about that on the last show.
No, you could ask me about that.
When did you get the call? And by that, everything that I know about the call, and I don't know if this is true, I learned from Sister Act, and a little bit from Sister Act 2, so I don't know if there's consistency there, or, you know, if Whoopi Goldberg was in your life, but that's what I know about the call. So when did you get the call? And then I'll tell you if it compares to Sister Act or Sister Act 2.
Yeah, well, I've never seen Sister Act 2, and I'm blanking on the first one. So
very enjoyable movie.
Yeah, not really my genre, but
okay.
But you know, so I don't know if it was the same. I got mine in college. I was pre-law.
Okay.
And I really thought I was going to go into law, and had done some internships in the House of Representatives, and was just kind of headed in that direction. And I just kept feeling pulled away and pulled towards something bigger and something else. And it's like I just couldn't not think about it. And it just, you know, the more I tried not to think about it, the more I thought about it. And by the time I got to my senior year, I was really sure I was being called to at least consider the ministry. And I went to seminary. And seminary just reinforced all of that for me. And it was the right fit and where I was supposed to be. And things just sort of fell into place. And, you know, it, so it's been kind of a long journey, but I've been ordained 10 years next month.
I thought you said, I've been ordained 10 times. I thought it only had to be once. This shows you what I don't know anything about anything. But so only ordained once.
Only
then.
Ordained once.
Okay, because
yes.
It stays. Yeah. Does it expire?
It does not, no.
Okay.
No, it's you get ordained, and generally that's it.
Okay.
And I was ordained in the Presbyterian Church, and then I switched over to the United Church of Christ over LGBT issues, actually.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Can I? What happened with the Presbyterians?
Well, the Presbyterians, when I was going to seminary, they had a clause written into their Book of Order, which is their constitution, saying that you had to either live in chastity and singleness if you were not married, or in marriage as a man and a woman.
Hmm.
So for many of us who were openly gay, this was a very problematic place to be. And I got to the point where I felt like I couldn't be in a church that wouldn't allow me to be a full person and felt like I needed to leave. And there were, of course, many openly gay Presbyterian ministers. The rules changed somewhat this spring in that individual presbyteries, it's kind of the rough geographic equivalent of diocese, started to ordain openly gay LGBT people. But, you know, it's not a nationwide thing, and it's up for interpretation in some areas, and it's still an evolving process. It's moving in the right direction, but an evolving process.
Okay.
But the change for me came when two women came to me and wanted me to marry them, and I couldn't do it without risking my ordination.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't want to do this anymore. And it felt more important to me to be able to minister to everyone, including my LGBT friends. And so I went to a church that allows me to do that.
Did you have to shop around and find? All right, so let's see. We got the Episcopalians over here,
yes,
and
yes.
They might let. I don't know how that works, how you pick another one.
Well, it was the United Church of Christ and the Presbyterian Church had sort of this exchange system for ministers. It's called the Formula of Agreement. And so I just approached the United Church of Christ and, you know, had to go through about a year of redoing my psych assessment and that sort of thing, and they decided I was okay, and I moved my ordination. And
you're like a transfer student.
It's
I
kind of
love
like
that.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go near the psych evaluation, though I have many questions about that.
You can ask about it.
My assumption is you passed.
I did.
Look at
I
that.
Did. Both times, Presbyterian and UCC.
And you've been ordained 10 times. That's what I want to put out
times.
There to the world.
Five of them from the back of Rolling Stone.
Look at Well, in that case, so have I then. Great. Great. Did we ever consider Judaism? Was it in the mix?
You know, I had one of my really good friends from college is a rabbi now.
Okay.
And totally respect one another, you know, where we are. But, you know, that for me, I've just kind of always been drawn to the churches I've been drawn to on the Christian side. And she's been drawn to the synagogue and, you know.
Do you have any rabbis to set me up with? It's not really a function of the show, and I don't know in the 3 years of the show I've ever asked a guest to set me up. But just keep that in mind by the time we get to the end of the show. You know,
I'll see what
no pressure.
Do.
We have a few minutes. So much gay news out there, and I picked some stories that I thought you might have some opinions on.
Okay.
You ready?
Ready.
So yesterday was a big election. Jody and I talked about that a little bit earlier. And one person who was elected we did not discuss because I was saving it for you is longtime town clerk Rose Marie Belforti. Who is in Ledyard, New York. Did you hear about this?
Is she the one who won't sign?
She will not sign marriage licenses. And she was reelected yesterday. I think there's maybe 400 people or so vote. And she will not sign marriage licenses. And she tries to delay people to foist them off on the deputy. But she said, I want to do, this is a quote, I want to do what the Bible tells me to do. I realize that I can't do this. There are too many references in the Bible that say this is not right. Mm-hmm. And so she said she won't sign them. Mm-hmm. And the Bible tells her not to sign them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? Is the Bible telling? I want to know specifically if the Bible is telling longtime town clerk Rose Marie Belforti in Ledyard, New York, not to sign marriage licenses.
Well, she clearly thinks it is.
Yeah.
I disagree. You know, and I think the question first we have to look at is she's being asked to sign off on civil marriages.
She is.
Not religious ceremonies. And, you know, this is a function of her job, to serve all the people, all of her constituents. And that's the question here, is can you hold a public office when you will not treat all of your constituents equally and give them, you know, the rights they are guaranteed under the law? The analogy I would make is that when people of faith have something that can, that conflicts with the basic work that they have to do, that's a question that they have to make about, you know, or that's a question that they ask themselves about, am I able to do this work? For me, several years ago, I was interested in serving as a prison chaplain, but it was in a prison, and I have, you know, I thought it could be great work working with folks who really could benefit from someone who was sympathetic and would be, you know, could bring spiritual help into the prison system. But it was in a place where they had the death penalty. And I am religiously opposed to the death penalty. I think it's very clear in Scripture. And I knew I couldn't take part in anything that had to do with the death penalty. So I didn't apply. I said, this is where I'm drawing the line, because my religious convictions will not let me do this job. Now, obviously, this town clerk didn't, you know, she thinks that there should be an exception. And, you know, for me, it's troubling. I would hope more people would sort of say, you know, separate out a civil issue from a religious issue.
Right.
And say, can I serve the people that I am sworn to serve? And if not, is this the right position for me?
Yeah. She got reelected.
She did.
We didn't vote. Did you vote for her?
I did not.
Okay.
No.
I don't live there.
Yes.
Listen, this show is not above suborning voter fraud. We've done it before. We'll likely do it again. It's fine.
You know that's going to be the headline of the Brattleboro Reformer.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Yes.
I would love select board member on his gay radio show, suborn voter fraud in Ledyard, New York.
That's right.
I would count that as a mark of success. All right, so that's what's going on there in New York. Now, oh, actually, also in New York, you know the Roman Catholic Church?
I've heard of them, yes.
Yes. So, New York Roman Catholic Archbishop Timothy Dolan, who is a staunch opponent of marriage equality, he issued a decree. A lot of religious folks, they love the decrees.
Big on the decrees.
I need to, when was the last time you did a decree? I need to do more decrees.
I haven't been doing them. I should like
to. You need to do that.
Yeah.
Wilmington, a Wilmington decree.
Yes,
come to the potluck. I decree it.
I decree it.
I decree it here. And I should ask, how is Wilmington doing? For folks who don't know, who listen to the show from all over the country, Wilmington and the surrounding areas were hit really hard. I mean, Wilmington was hit really hard by Hurricane Irene. How is everyone there?
You know, it was hit very hard, and it was pretty devastating. And, you know, I think any area that's hit by a natural disaster, it takes years to really rebuild, not just physically, but economically, emotionally. And so much work has happened already, and people have been remarkably good to their neighbor, and people have been very generous from outside of the area. And, you know, the weekend after, people were calling saying, can I come in and help? And the roads weren't stable enough for people to travel over.
I was going to say, that's got to change the nature of your work a little bit when you have a natural disaster.
Yeah.
It's not just the normal course of events.
That would be a game changer. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I'm really amazed by what people have done so far. But, like, any natural disaster, just it's a slow process, you know, and all you can do is, you know, pray or hope or whatever you do for the folks there.
Yeah. Well, in New York, we should say, Timothy Dolan, who is a staunch opponent, he's an archbishop, staunch opponent of marriage equality, he issued his decree prohibiting participation by clergy and church employees in same-sex marriages and forbidding the use of not only churches, but other Catholic-affiliated facilities for such unions. The wide-ranging directive issued last month reads in part, I'm going to read you a little bit, quote, no member of the clergy, priest, or deacon incardinated in the Archdiocese of New York or any person while acting as an employee of the church may participate in the civil solemnization or celebration of a same-sex marriage, celebration is kind of an interesting word there, by the way. Mm-hmm. That's not just about doing the ceremony, but even celebrating it, yeah. Which includes, but is not limited to, providing services, accommodations, advantages, facilities, goods, or privilege for such event. Ecclesiastical solemnization or celebration of same-sex marriages is expressly forbidden by canon law. No Catholic facility or property, including, but not limited to, parish, this is, I gotta do more degrees, parishes, missions, chapels, meeting halls, Catholic educational, health or charitable institutions or benevolent orders or any place dedicated, consecrated, or used for Catholic worship may be used for the solemnization or consecration of same-sex marriages. That's pretty far-reaching.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
Do you guys get together and talk about the other branches?
Not really,
okay.
No. We've got our own work to do.
You have your own work to do.
Yeah, no, but... You know, that sounds, I mean, it does sound, it sounds like if you are a secretary at a Catholic church, can you go to your nephew's?
It doesn't even sound like you can go and celebrate.
Right, right. Or if you are at a parish and you're a parish priest who is sympathetic to LGBT couples, if two people are married, you can't even say in the prayers of the people, you know, oh, congratulations to.
Is there an or else? I'm looking for the or else
or
in
else.
The decree.
Yeah, I think the or
oh,
else.
Oh, there is. There is. There totally is.
There.
Violators. I was kidding. I didn't think there was really going to be an or else. Violators may be subject to church sanctions who, and Dolan campaigned aggressively but unsuccessfully against the marriage equality legislation. Did you see him there?
I do.
And I should back up. You were there in Albany.
Yeah. If he was there, I did not see him. I saw plenty of religious folks, but I don't believe I saw him.
What's church sanctions? Can't you be excommunicated?
Right, that you know, any kind of a church discipline.
And this, he covers a lot. His archdiocese covers the New York City boroughs of Manhattan, the Bronx, and Staten Island, plus yeah. Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester counties. I've lived in many of those places. Mm-hmm. And so here's what it would mean. A blogger named Zach Ford, who does Think Progress...
I know that blog.
Yeah. He wrote, quote, the property restrictions in Dolan's decree are troubling, particularly given he specifically cites educational and health institutions. Mm-hmm. This would mean that a bedridden patient in a Catholic hospital would not be permitted to marry his partner on the property. It's not clear from the decree, but this could conceivably extend to any and all recognition of same-sex unions, which would create severe complications for couples who might be accessing health care or charitable services mm-hmm. that are provided by the church.
And that's deeply troubling.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a chaplain in a private hospital, you know, and saw LGBT couples, you know, not allowed to visit each other. Now, when that was brought up to the administration, they said that's not correct. They should be allowed to. But they were, you know, I remember one incident where a man wanted to see his partner who was actively dying, and the nurse kept him away. And if this happens in private secular institutions, it really makes me worry what would happen in an institution where such a clear policy is in place.
We need a new decree.
A new decree.
I just, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could easily respond to, I certainly wouldn't say that I was born into Judaism, but culturally I was raised Jewish, and
right.
I know that there are branches of Judaism that espouse such things, but right. Some of this is just so inconceivable to me. We had, have you met Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum?
That sounds so good.
Yeah, big congregation in New York City, and she was on the show, and we were with CBST, Beth Simchat Torah, and we were talking about it on the show, and it's just so clear that this wouldn't fly in so many different congregations,
right.
But the idea that this would extend to hospitals is, it just crosses this, and you've done so much hospital work.
I have, yeah, and, you know, hospitals are really the places where you have to see what the folks need and
yeah.
really step back and... You know, all of the rules need to serve the patient. The patient doesn't need to conform to these expectations of you can't have your partner here. I mean, that's just not good for the patient. It's
right.
not good for their family.
I think if you have to choose between your religion and your relationship while in the hospital, I would like to say that that's not good for your health.
I would think it wouldn't be.
I decree it.
You decree it.
I decree it. It is not good for your health. So that's what's going on with the Roman Catholics.
And, you know, one thing I would add, too, is that we've seen surveys that the majority, or I'm sorry, I don't have the exact numbers, but a very high percentage of Roman Catholic folks support civil rights for LGBT people.
Yeah.
You know, and it's...
You know who doesn't?
Who's that?
New York Roman Catholic Archbishop Timothy Dolan.
He made a decree about it.
Yes, he does not support that. And so it's kind of an interesting story. I'm sure there are any number of assumptions about New York City and my old stomping grounds, but it doesn't matter. The geographic location doesn't matter. This is kind of, and he gets to stand up for everyone and say that?
Well, that's the structure of the church. He does. In his, where he is. Now, people might not agree with him.
Yeah.
But that's
a little scary if you're sitting around thinking, all right, I don't agree with him, but he's the archbishop, so, and I could be excommunicated, or they could take away my Sister Act DVD, and I would be sad. That's enough to convert to Judaism right there. All right, I got one more story for you, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Albany. Over in Michigan, not sure if you've heard what's going on in Michigan. Michigan Senate Republicans have taken what could be a useful and much-needed anti-bullying bill, and they have turned it into what amounts to a license to bully. Senate Bill 137, which passed 26-11 with zero Democratic votes, was meant to protect all students from bullying and harassment. Yet the bill, already weakened by the lack of enumerated classes to be protected, was further gutted by conservatives in the Senate who slipped in dangerous exemptions that give bullies free rein to harass other students. You want to take a big old guess what the exemptions were?
Religious exemptions.
The Reverend Emily Heath. In the mind of some GOP Michigan lawmakers, there are exemptions and thereby logical excuses for bullying. So those purposely vague exemptions give bullies, whether it be fellow students, teachers, school employees, or other parents, a legal out if their act of harassment on another young person was done because of, quote, deep moral conviction.
Oh, wow.
Or, quote, religious belief.
Wow.
Deep moral conviction or religious belief. I mean, look, I am in no way reducing your being to religion.
Right.
You know, you're about so much more than that. But I would venture to guess that a big part of your life is religion.
Right.
And I don't need to speak for you because you're actually sitting here right now, but so there are these people in Michigan who are saying religion, and this is not. So the last story was about Roman Catholic, and I think there's a degree to which we could say, oh, but that's not my branch, and I'm not a Roman Catholic.
Right.
This is not about a specific branch of Christianity. This is people saying religion is an excuse to bully.
Exactly. It is. That's what they are saying. And it's absolutely wrong. I mean, it's, especially, you know, and they're talking about every religion here, but if we're talking about Christianity, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, you know, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. That's the core. And Jesus never said bully your neighbor if you don't agree with them.
He wasn't a bully, Jesus, was he?
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah. But this idea that someone's religious liberty should allow them to intrude on the liberty of another person. Your religious liberty stops when you start to oppress another person with it and intrude on their liberty, you know. And if you are bullying a kid and you think that's your religious liberty, that's not your religious liberty. That's your excuse for bullying.
How do we get away? I'm sorry. You know, Jody and I were talking about this earlier. Just, I think I'm in one of those moods today where I don't feel like justifying anything because I find it to be so absurd. We were talking a little bit earlier about that it's a new track for marriage equality. Mm-hmm. People are recommending that we not talk about civil rights, that we talk about love.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not about allowing two people to have equal rights, it's allowing two people to love, which that's a whole conversation itself. And I was just thinking, as Jody and I were talking about it, yeah, honestly, I just don't feel like I need to convince anyone of anything right now.
Right.
But I also don't understand, and I've been doing this for a while, not just being gay, but doing the show,
mm-hmm.
and I just don't get why people are allowed to do that.
Well, and I don't, you know, what's troubling is that there are plenty of religious folks, who would stand up against this bill and say, this is not right. And religious folks who stand for equality, we've got to learn how to use our voices for good and not be shouted out by these voices that are manipulating faith to change the entire conversation politically in our country. We're not talking about politics. We're talking about gender. You know, I have no interest in politics. I have interest in genuine civility and treating people the way my faith tells me to treat them. And the fact that they've hijacked, you know, what I believe to make oppressive laws, laws that will result in kids being bullied and maybe kids dying.
It's crazy. I'm even sitting here thinking, yeah, that's not right. No, it's actually, and I am not, you know, I don't know if you know this. I'm actually not a reverend. I'm not a rabbi. Yeah. There were a couple nights I was a nun, but that was different. That's a whole different show. And I'm sorry, Mom. I really wasn't. But I just, it's outrageous. Outrageous. And I don't see, the funny thing is I'm sitting here thinking I can in some ways justify the Roman Catholic thing because which by the way, I can't. But
it's
in
some,
it's internal yeah. And it's very specific in a way and it's connected to a set of beliefs, but to encompass religion is kind of a big word.
Right.
And so to encompass all of religion and say, where are my quotes again? Here we go. Deep moral conviction. Mm-hmm. Or religious belief mm-hmm. that could justify certain types of bullying is, I just, it's in some ways inconceivable to me.
What about?
And by the way, and that not only you can do that, but that it passes.
Right. And yes. Well, what about like the Christian identity movement where they think that they are a religion and what they are is a white supremacist group?
I don't even know them.
Oh, they're.
I've stayed away from this one. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, these are basically, white supremacist religious communities, uh-huh. You know, who would tell you, you know, everyone except them is inferior. They could look at a law like this and say, well, see, I have license to harass that Jewish kid.
They do.
Right,
that's
exactly.
This law gives them that.
And,
I mean, they do.
Yeah, and they can win, you know, any challenge to it. I mean, that, you know, the idea that anyone would be able to harass people and have this free pass, I mean, it's a slippery slope.
I'm in shock. I mean, people can't see because it's a radio show. I'm just sitting here just shaking my head. I'm just shaking my head. All right. We're going to talk about, can we talk about happy things?
Sure.
We got to talk about your musical selections for this week's show.
Okay.
Which I know you gave great thought to in that I asked you maybe 2 seconds before we went on the air. So this is the part of the show, because we didn't do this last time, did we?
I don't think we did.
Okay. This is the part of the show, the Reverend Emily Heath. I just want to put it in front of everything.
Okay, you can do that.
Even though our friend Mark Gensler told me that I sometimes use it inappropriately, but that's okay. So this is the part of the show where you tell our listening audience what your two song selections say about you.
About me.
Oh, this is a little self-analysis. You can even do it in the third person if you want. Yeah, we're going to get some insight. This could be your psychological test.
Another one.
This is the main one, because this is for the show.
It's a lot shorter than the others.
I bet. Well, you don't know. We don't know where this is going to go right now. But all right, so we got two for you.
Okay.
What does Ani DeFranco, so it's not just Amazing Grace, but Ani DeFranco singing Amazing Grace, what does that song say about the Reverend Emily Heath?
Well, you've got to remember, I just grabbed my iPhone and picked a couple.
You
songs.
Thought about these for weeks.
For
what
weeks,
do you got?
Weeks. You know, I am in college when I started listening to her and going to her shows. You know, I was just so intrigued by her music. You know, and going to the shows when there were, you know, only 8 or 10 people in the audience, and just the ferocity with which she played and the way she used music and words just was always so moving to me. And when she did Amazing Grace on Dilate, I don't know what her motivation behind it was
mm-hmm.
or where she was coming from, but for some reason I've just always liked her version. And, you know, when she sings, through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. Grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. There's something about knowing that sung by, you know, someone who identifies so much with the queer community, mm-hmm. the feminist community.
Someone who questions.
Yeah. There's just something about her rendition that I love.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. That's our insight to you. And we'll do one more. I don't think a lot of people know this group, and they should.
Yeah.
What does How Long Do I Have to Wait for You by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings say about the Reverend Emily Heath?
You know, when I was just scanning, I thought, I think that reminds me of the church a little bit.
Look at that.
You know, it's like, how long do we have to keep having these debates about who's worthy and who's good and who's equal?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a great talk. You know,
do you get tired sometimes? Can we pull back the curtain a little bit? I mean,
yeah.
I would be exhausted.
It's one of the reasons I left the Presbyterian Church
gotcha.
To come to the UCC is I didn't want to have to fight all the time. I wanted to do ministry.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have to justify that I'm okay and you know, the people I love are okay, and I should be able to marry, you know, whoever I want to marry in a church of my denomination. Those are fights that just, I found that they suck the life out of me, and I want to use my energy for stuff like when my town undergoes a natural disaster.
Yeah.
you know, or, you know, making sure that, you know, the people in my parish who need to talk to me can talk to me. You know, and it's kind of, you know, some people stayed and fought, and good for them. They, you know, that was their call, but it became clear to me that I was ready to do something else.
There you go. There you go. Now, any recommendations for people who want to learn more, who some good sites for people to go to about the intersection between an LGBTQ identity and either religion in general, or what resources would we send people to? I don't know that one.
Yeah.
All right. Let's look. I'm going to look it up now. Is it believeoutloud.org, I would assume.
I think it's .com.
Let's see.
Actually.
Believeoutloud.org. You're right.
All right.
Yeah. Look how great that is. Yep. We are a million strong. We believe Jesus' message compels us to welcome all, regardless of sexual orientation and gender identity. Show the world that you can be Christian and believe in LGBT equality. Join the movement to unite a million Christians for LGBT equality.
Right.
Pretty good.
And if they want a website of a denomination that, on the national level, is fully accepting of LGBT people, I would say UCC.org. That's
great.
The United Churches of Christ website. And there's a whole section I know on LGBT issues. So,
all right. Yeah. We're going to make this a regular segment. We're going to do this every couple months. We're going to sit in this room, hopefully.
This one right here.
Probably not, but we'll find someplace else to go. We'll do more of these.
Sounds great.
People really, oh, I haven't sent you any of the emails. People sent in emails after you were on. They
oh,
were
yeah?
so, well, I think it was you and Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum were right yeah. after each other. And
yeah.
so it just hit a lot of people. And we get these emails, I think, as I told you, from kids across the country who say, I have to choose between my religion and my sexual orientation. And,
yeah.
and the short answer is no, you don't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that maybe God, you know, not maybe, but God's calling you to be your full self. And, you know, we come in all brands of gender and sexuality, and it's, you know, whoever you are, you're loved.
Yeah. That is, all right, we're ending on that note. All right, well, folks, oh, and you have to do the end tag with me, which you've
okay.
never done before, so
no.
the keywords are so gay, you'll know when to do it, trust
okay.
me. All right, folks, that wraps it up for us this week. As always, drop us a line at thisshowissogay@aol.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn more about all the fun things happening with the show. And, of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we like you. Get out there, go do some amazing, amazing things, and remember, above all else, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?